It seems kind of hopeless right now, but you're going to figure this out.
This is pretty debilitating.
I'm able to turn my pain into purpose.
There are people out in the world that do understand what you're going through.
Welcome to Major Pain. I'm your host, Jesse Mercury, and this week we'll be speaking with Colby, who has 11 diagnoses. This includes fibromyalgia, PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, asthma, IBS, eczema, PTSD, depression, anxiety, bipolar, ADHD, and somatic symptom disorder. That last diagnosis, somatic symptom disorder, is something I'd never heard of before. The way Colby describes living with somatic symptom disorder is that if Colby were to focus on any of their symptoms, let's say chronic pain, then that chronic pain would amplify. Anyone living with chronic illness knows what it's like to live with health uncertainty. This presents in so many ways. It can be not knowing how you're going to show up on a certain day, not knowing when you're going to flare up, when your pain is going to be worse, sometimes not even knowing what your diagnosis is. And I think all of us have experienced spiraling thoughts where we can't get our brains out of these thoughts of worrying about what's happening with our health. But for Colby, these spiraling thoughts can lead to a worsening of symptoms. So as Colby will tell us, they focus on trying to quell thoughts of health uncertainty. Colby's daily chronic pain is intense. They do have some suspicion that there may be an underlying condition at the root of some of their chronic illnesses that has yet to be discovered, but for now, Colby is focused on living with their conditions in the best way possible. Colby was so much fun to talk to, a fellow nerd who also loves Star Trek The Next Generation, so we definitely had some fun talking about that. But they're also living with such a complex constellation of chronic illnesses. They share some of their coping mechanisms, which I found super interesting, like writing everything down to get it out of their brain. This is a very interesting discussion today. I'm so grateful to Colby for sharing their story with us, and we'll get to it in just a few minutes. Something Colby brought up that I was really interested to talk about because it mirrors my own life right now is that Colby is taking LDN, low-dose naltrexone. This is something that's been coming up over and over again on the podcast, the benefits of LDN for a variety of chronic illnesses, so much so that I have started taking it. I am about a week into taking LDN right now. And I've already learned a bunch of interesting stuff about it that I think is really important to share. Actually, one of the most important things I learned from Colby in our discussion today when we discussed the fact that you cannot take opiates if you are on LDN. So we'll talk more about that during our discussion with Colby. But of course, with any medication, there are potential side effects, and I have been experiencing a couple of them. I'm taking 1.5 milligrams of LDN. It's such a low dose, but I've actually been experiencing sleep disturbances. I've had a very hard time staying asleep and extremely vivid dreams. And because of my mast cell activation, if I don't sleep well, I flare up. So I've actually been doing a little rough the last couple days. Luckily, I was able to pinpoint the fact that the LDN was causing my sleep disturbances. I looked this up. And those are the two top side effects from LDN, insomnia and vivid, sometimes disturbing dreams. There's an easy fix for this. You take LDN in the morning instead of at night. Taking it at night is the best time to take it, but you can also take it in the morning if you are having sleep disturbances. So that's what I'm going to switch to tomorrow. Obviously, it's still way too soon to say if I'm seeing a benefit from LDN, but it's definitely doing something because I'm having some side effects. So it's definitely in my body. We can say that much for sure. I actually saw my primary care doctor a couple days ago, and he said that he has started prescribing LDN and seeing some really great benefit with some of his patients, which is really exciting. He said that about half of his patients who were trying it were reporting a benefit. There's all sorts of research being done about it right now about how LDN can potentially help reset your immune system if you are in a constant chronic fatigue or chronic illness state. And as Marisa told us on her episode a couple weeks ago, it is being used for mast cell activation syndrome. So I'm really excited to see if I see benefit. I will definitely keep you updated. I actually saw my MCAS doctor the day after my primary care doctor, and I asked her about it as well. It's not something she's prescribing yet. She said she's keeping her eye on the research, but it's just not far enough along to know if there's any long-term risks or anything like that. So, you know, I'm definitely assuming the risk for this. You know, I want to see if it works. And I want to be super clear, I'm not advocating that other people go out and try this. I'm just sharing where I'm at with my chronic illness journey. This is sort of the hot news right now is that I'm trying LDN. The other thing that I'm doing that I talked to my MCAS doctor about is redoing my MCAS testing. And this is something I'm actually kind of terrified about, because so far all the testing has come back negative, but the medication was so incredibly wildly helpful that we've just been running with the assumption that that is what I have, because that's what all the evidence points to, and it's the best that we've got. But it's still, you know, it's still scary, because if it comes back negative again, I don't want to have these voices in my head telling me that my diagnosis is wrong. And I've been misdiagnosed with so many things in the past, and I have no reason to think that this diagnosis is wrong, because, like I just said, the medication is working so well. But I don't know, it's difficult. It's hard to think about having that test result come back negative again. It wouldn't change anything, but we're really just trying to capture a positive result, because that would change a lot. That would really give us the certainty that we're in the right place with the diagnosis. My big concern still is that there's something that we're still missing, like some other thing underlying the MCAS and the small fiber neuropathy. And it's hard to quiet those voices. And I wanted to share that with you because it sort of mirrors the theme of our conversation with Colby today, discussing somatic symptom disorder, discussing the voices in your head when you have a chronic illness. I think this is something that is really important to talk about. So I just wanted to share a little bit about my internal monologue and where I'm at with my disease in this moment. Let's check in with what people are saying about major pain in our community. First of all, we got two new 5-star ratings on Spotify, which is massive. Thank you so much. That brings us up to 42 5-star ratings on Spotify, which is so incredible. And we got a new 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts as well. All of these ratings are so, so appreciated. This is one of the best ways to help support the Major Pain Podcast, is to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why this is such a big deal, is because a lot of people use the ratings and reviews to sort of judge the success of a podcast. And the reason that matters to me is that there's some people that I want to interview. You know, I actually sent an email today to Rebecca Yaros, who wrote Fourth Wing and Iron Flame, because I read those books recently. They are fantasy novels that feature a protagonist, a woman with a chronic illness. She has a connective tissue disease. It is not named in the story, but to me, reading it, it's very obvious that it is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I do believe that is the chronic illness that Rebecca Yaros has. So when I write to someone like this, if they look up the podcast on Spotify and they see a bunch of reviews, in my mind, that lends credence to the legitimacy of the show and maybe might tip them over into saying yes to coming on the podcast. So this is just one of the many reasons that having a lot of positive reviews can help a show. So I know it's a long shot, but if you want me to have the best chance possible of Rebecca Yaros agreeing to come on the podcast and discuss her chronic illness journey, do me a solid. Go on Spotify, go on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a 5-star rating. We did get a new review as well on Apple Podcasts. This is from JJulius2008, and it reads, "I love your podcast. Please keep doing this podcast. It is so informative, and as somebody with a chronic illness, I so appreciate listening to all the stories. It creates awareness for supposedly invisible illness that I don't feel are ever invisible, at least not mine." J. Julius, thank you so, so much for your incredibly kind review of Major Pain. Last week, we had an amazing episode with Deanna and Angel discussing the College of Adaptive Arts. On Spotify, Naughty Moon comments, "This is wonderful. I'm 62, disabled, searching to socialize and live. I'm not getting it. I've tried and I'm crumbling. Columbus, Ohio needs help. There is no help for older people. I'm lost." This comment is heartbreaking, and I'm wishing, not for the first time, that I could respond to comments on Spotify, which there is no functionality to do. I can only hope that Naughty Moon is listening to this episode so I can say, I'm so sorry that that is your experience. That is so unfair, and it makes me want Deanna to succeed so badly in her mission to bring the learning model of the College of Adaptive Arts nationwide as a layer of learning at all campuses, because there is such an incredible need for it. Over on Facebook, Deanna actually posted about her appearance on the podcast last week with her sister Angel, and I really wanted to share the post itself and a couple of the comments. The post is a photo of Angel, and it reads, "Happy World Down Syndrome Day. This woman is my heart. She's my sister 1 year my junior and has been my guiding light and love throughout our lives. She gave a most powerful podcast to Jesse of Major Pain this past week on how she felt when she aged out of the high school special education system and watched all of her friends slash siblings leave for college. She's my inspiration for co-founding the College of Adaptive Arts. There's some really touching comments here. This one from Mary reads, I absolutely love this. I have a 23-year-old daughter with special needs. She attends a day program in Marietta called the CADS. She really enjoys it. Thank you for loving and caring for Angel and others like my daughter, Haley. They are truly a blessing to all they meet. And I wanted to share that comment because in our episode last week, we discussed Angel's experience in a day program, how she was bullied, and how that trauma still lives with her to this day. So this comment really shows that not all day programs are the same. I think that's important to keep in mind. Julie comments, I listened to the podcast last night. It was fantastic. You both did so well sharing your stories and spreading CAA's mission. Very inspiring. There's a bunch more comments here. I really appreciated Deanna sharing the podcast with her community. And of course, on our social media, there was so much support for this episode, which I really appreciated. It's such a great episode. If you haven't listened to last week's podcast about the College of Adaptive Arts, it's one you don't want to miss. Over on Instagram, we got a really powerful comment on our recent episode with Marisa about mast cell activation syndrome. This is from Hello Magnolia Bug. It reads, this episode changed everything for me. Thank you so much for this phenomenal podcast. And thank you, Marisa, for your beautiful vulnerability. Thank you so much, Hello Magnolia Bug, for your comment. This person left some comments on a couple episodes. I'm so glad you found the podcast and that you are enjoying it. Something I wanted to announce, this is the 150th episode of Major Pain. I didn't want to let the occasion go by without at least mentioning that. I'm so proud of this show. I put so much effort and love and passion into this show. And actually, I was recently applying to a few grants. And while I was doing so, I wanted to know how many diseases we'd covered on the podcast. So I actually pulled up a spreadsheet and I just started listing them from the first episode, just going back through the episode descriptions. And I counted 110. And with somatic symptom disorder, I believe we're now at 111. I might be a little off on that number, but we've covered a lot of diseases on this podcast. My goal is to cover them all. I know that that's not realistic, but that's sort of the thing that I'm driving towards. You know, I want to cover every disease. I want to have at least one conversation for everyone in the world who is sick to be able to listen to and hear another human being talk about living with their disease. That's sort of my stretch goal, and I really hope to be doing this podcast for years and years to come. In order to make that dream a reality, I need your support. There are so many great ways to support the Major Pain Podcast, including our ongoing Patreon campaign, our affiliate links for Rare Patient Voice, NeuroHealth, and our Amazon affiliate shop, following us on social media, sharing the show with a friend, and of course, leaving us positive ratings and reviews. You can learn about all the ways to support Major Pain on our website, majorpainpodcast.com/support. Extra special thank you to our Patreon producers supporting this show at the highest tier of $25 per month, Steve Cavanaugh, Chris Fowler, Trish O'Brien, and Hipster Leia. I'll remind you as always that my guest and I are not medical professionals. Please do not take any medical action based off what you hear on this show without first consulting your doctor. And with that, we'll jump into our conversation with Colby. Colby, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on the show today to get to know you and hear about your story. Let's start with getting to know you. So why don't you tell us about yourself?
I actually took notes so that way I could remember what I could say about myself.
Yeah. Who am I?
Excuse me while I get out my notebook. I was like, here's my about section. Don't forget it, because I always forget like all the stuff I do. And I'm like, I live in a place. So I don't have a job. Like, I'm on general assistance for my state, which is like, it's the state level of federal funding for people mm-hmm. who are disabled. And it's like, you're on it while you're waiting to get onto SSI or whatever. Anyway, that's the boring part about me. I like playing video games and I draw and I write. I write like a lot of fan fiction and I make characters all the time. I like making funny voices because that's fun and enjoyable and a really great way to like get rid of stress too. when I'm not feeling awful, I keep pretty busy. So that's good. I went to tech school for art, communication, and design. And I went for a semester of college for it too before just pain and general stuff got in the way. So I also go visit my family sometimes. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome. I'm so curious. Okay, I have a couple questions I'm curious about. When you write fan fiction, what universe are you writing in?
A lot of them. Like, not a lot at once, because I'm not a huge fan of writing crossovers. It's just a personal preference, not that they're bad. I spent like a good 3 months writing Star Trek The Next Generation fan fiction.
No way!
Yeah, which is like how I found you, is because I was seeing your videos on TikTok for your little, they're not little, they're pretty impressive in my opinion, because I don't do that stuff. your TikToks where you edit yourself in, yeah. And those are so cute. I love them.
Thank you. So, it's basically like live action fan fiction.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's the first time I've seen anything like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So like, I'm like, yeah, it's so cool to be here talking to Jesse Mercury.
So wait, your funnel to Major Payne was through the Star Trek. Yeah. You found Major Payne because I posted about it on the Star Trek page. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then I also write fanfic for video games too. Like Dragon Age Inquisition, it's Mass Effect, it's right now it's a small like visual novel game that I just played, which is Arcade Spirits, and Stardew Valley. That's a staple of my life.
Wonderful. I love Stardew Valley. Fanfiction so for Stardew good. Valley, that's a great idea. So, yeah. Okay, my brain is going to stick on this unless I ask you this question for the whole rest of the time. Can you give me an example of your Star Trek The Next Generation fan fiction? Because, like, this is my favorite show of all time. What is the style of fiction we're doing? Are you trying to, like, create new episodes, or are you, like, these two characters need to be in love and have a relationship because they didn't in the show? Is it that type of thing?
I make characters to go fit into whatever world I'm writing. So,
okay,
like,
cool.
Like, OCs are original characters. So, and also, like, I write fan fiction to like work through my trauma and kind of trauma dump. So it's a little depressing, but it's also like very much romance that I write.
Nice.
So like also at the end, I'm definitely going to plug my AO3, which is Archive of Our Own.
Fan feel fiction. Free to plug it now. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm on AO3. My pen name is Seago Inc, like SEAGOATINK. Cause I'm a Capricorn, and I both write and I draw, so I ink in two different ways. And I wanted to become a tattoo artist, which is not happening now. But you know.
Okay, so what's your favorite romantic pairing that you've created? Is it between an original character and a crew member? Is it between? Okay, yeah, you're shaking yes, because that's like literally what I've done as well. Is
right,
like
yeah.
my whole Star Trek series revolves around my character and Data having a relationship, which brings me just endless joy. You too. Oh my god! Wait, so I've got some competition over here.
listen, we can exist at the same time in separate universes and still have Data. It's okay.
Great.
Like, I see the appeal.
I'm happy to shake on that.
Yeah.
Okay, very glad I asked. Anyway, okay, let's get into your story. So, Colby, what is your major pain?
Oh, boy. excuse me while I turn the page and look at my illnesses. So fun. I've got... like, here's my list of illnesses, here's my list of medications, here's my symptoms that have symptoms that have symptoms.
Oh no.
Anyway, it's fun being me. Physically, this list, that my physical list is much shorter. So I've got chronic pain, which is for now we're thinking it's fibromyalgia, like that's the official diagnosis. I have PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is super fun. I have asthma. I have IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and I have eczema. If you'll notice, three of those things get worse with stress. So I have PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have depression and I have anxiety and somatic symptom disorder. And then bipolar and ADHD. And then I have like some symptoms that are like, yeah, we'll put those in your illnesses chart. And so that's its own
thing. Wow, that's a list. And you know, part of the beauty of hosting this podcast for me is I've learned so much about so many diseases. Because sometimes there's people like you with so many diagnoses, it would be impossible to go through all of them and talk about all of them in detail. Yeah. But we have this huge back catalog of episodes about things. You know, we had a great bipolar episode recently that was so fantastic. We've like talked about fibromyalgia and so many things that I think a lot of people are familiar with. But there's a couple in there that I think people are less familiar with, and things that maybe we haven't covered on the show as often. So the first one that stuck out to me was PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. I do remember that we have had a previous guest who has that disease and talked a little bit about it, but it's a long time ago. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Like, what is PCOS?
Polycystic ovarian syndrome. I have like a mild case of it. Also, to preface, I've listened through to, I think, episode 5 of your stuff so far. Sometimes just like listening to people is painful. Before I answer your question, I'm really sorry. I listened to one of your friends talk about PTSD, and I really liked that episode. I really liked
thank you.
Both you and I don't remember her name right now, but she talked very well on it, spoke very well on it. And I enjoyed that episode. And then also I remember in your first episode, you were talking about what you knew about fibromyalgia, because you were like, I'm not sure that's my diagnosis, but I enjoyed that episode as well. I've enjoyed them all so far, honestly, but, but you know, like relating to me, those really spoke to me. They were very good. But PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, I don't even have large cysts that they can do anything about. They're like, yeah, we see a couple in there and they're like small. But they cause a lot of pain. And for some people, when they're on their period, those cysts will burst and cause extra bleeding and cause extra pain. And for other people, there's a different kind of cyst where it's tissue and not just like pus. And the tissue is like hair or teeth or bone or whatever. And it grows and it gets bigger. And I've known people who have had like grapefruit-sized cysts that need to be removed. It's just very painful. So for me, the reason we found it in me is because I don't have a regular period. I'll have a period like once or twice a year. And so my doctors have me on birth control so that way I have a regular period, because otherwise the uterine lining... And I've only been told this once and I was not feeling well. So this may not be 100% fully accurate, whatever. So if I don't have my period without medication, then the uterine lining builds up. I believe I'm more at risk for cervical cancer and things like that. Because when you have your period, the uterine lining sheds. And if you don't have your period, the uterine lining does not shed. If you have birth control and don't have your period because of birth control, the hormones within the birth control regulates the thickness of the uterine lining. So that way you're not gaining that risk and it stays stable. That's kind of what I know about PCOS. Admittedly, it's probably one of the things I know the least about as far as my issues. I know very little about somatic system disorder or symptom disorder also. So
that was the next one I was going to ask you about.
I do know some of it.
I don't know if I've actually heard of that one. So what is somatic symptom disorder?
Okay. Admittedly, I'm going to pull it up on my phone.
That's
is that totally fair?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most of the time when I'm podcasting and we have a question, we're just like, yeah, we could look this up on Google, but we won't. And then we're just like, someone is listening and screaming at their phone, just like, hey, it's this. So this is good. We're going a step beyond.
Yeah. Because I'm always like, listen, I barely have my brain as it is, just because like brain fog and all that. So I'm just like, all right, I'm going to go to Google because it knows for sure. And I question everything that goes on up here. So this is from psychiatry.org. Somatic system disorder is diagnosed when a person has significant focus on physical symptoms such as pain, weakness, or shortness of breath to a level that results in major distress and or problems functioning. The individual has excessive thoughts, feelings, and behaviors relating to the physical symptoms.
Interesting. No, I've never heard of this. Did you say somatic system or symptom?
Symptom. I keep on saying system on accent, but it is okay. Symptom.
I'm not imagining that. Okay. Somatic symptom disorder. So the general idea is that it is a mental health condition where you are very focused on the physicality of chronic illness.
As it was described to me kind of by my counselor, it's not that you're obsessed with your health exactly. It's that knowing all these problems and like knowing what's going on with your body kind of just heightens the experience and makes it worse.
Oh, okay. So like thinking about the chronic pain makes the chronic pain worse.
Yeah. Like for fibromyalgia, when you're stressed, it gets worse. So like if you're in pain, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in pain. This is awful. This sucks. I can't do anything. And then it just starts doubling in on itself and like feeding itself.
So how do you not get stuck in a feedback loop? I mean, do you distract yourself? Like how do you kind of get your brain out of that spot where the things are going to get worse? That sounds really hard.
Yeah, that's I have like notes of like, oh, if we get stuck, we can talk about that. So I've got that on my list, which is great. It's part of like my toolbox stuff of there's a lot of stuff in my life that I can't control, or like I'm feeling like very out of control of my own life, which is pretty common when even just you have one of my illnesses, but when you have a lot, like all of my illnesses together, like it's really common to feel like, oh, I have no control of my life. There's nothing I can do to influence my life. So it's kind of like you have to focus on like what you can control of like, well, I can't really get out of bed today, so I think I'm going to write fan fiction. Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm really upset about this and I have some like anger. So I have some energy from my anger. So I think that if I can, then I'm going to do a little cleaning, or I'm going to I'll sweep the floors about it, or I'll draw, or I'll take out the trash, because I can control my environment. I can control what I'm doing to a point, obviously, like, you know, anyone else, like they can't fly and be Superman. I can't go up and do my dishes. So it's very much like training your brain to think the way you want it to. It's still very overwhelming just because I already have all these symptoms, I have all these disorders, I have all these medications to take care of, and then I have to make sure that doctors are talking to other doctors that are talking to my psychiatrist, that are talking to my counselor. And it's like, oh God, if I don't have all of this listed, I'm going to miss it from someone and then they're going to think I'm psychotic. And so it's like, okay, I will just write it down and it will be out of my brain for now. Yeah. And I won't have to worry about it. Yeah. I went on a little bit of a tangent, but I hope that makes sense.
Oh, no, that was a great answer. Absolutely.
Okay,
so I feel like I have a frame of reference in general for these individual diagnoses, but I feel like living with this sort of complex puzzle of all these different illnesses at the same time, that's something that I'm really curious to hear more about. And I feel like, you know, let's do that by going through your story. Like, let's start at the beginning. When did you start to have chronic illness symptoms or, you know, mental health symptoms that were concerning?
It's kind of funny because I either have always felt this way, or when it came on, it was so subtle and subdued that it just felt like a normal part of life of like, yeah, you know, I listen to my grandparents, they're complaining about this or that or the other thing. And I'm like, oh, okay, so people just have pain normally. Yeah. And it wasn't until I was like in junior high that my dad like caught me like going to the other room so that way I could cry about how much pain I was in.
Wow.
And he was like, why did you never tell me? And I was like, I thought this was normal, my dude. Like,
So you've just been in pain your whole life. Can you describe your pain for me? I mean, this is part of the thing with fibromyalgia is like, people are familiar with it. It's like, oh yeah, I have chronic pain, widespread pain, but it is so individualized and it can be so different from person to person. So what does your chronic pain feel like?
So I have pain pretty much my entire back, and like it's nerve pain. So sometimes it'll go into my extremities all the way down to my fingers, to my toes. You know, sometimes my limbs will go numb, which is super fun. I'm usually in so much pain that I am nauseous from the pain. And like, so I don't go by, I mean, I know I should. When I'm talking to doctors, is like, oh, like your pain level 1 to 10, 10 being the worst you've ever felt and 1 being basically no pain at all. And I don't do that because it's like the second I get into more pain that I'm in, I kind of just shut down and then I don't exist and I don't, sometimes I'll just pass out. So it's like, I don't really remember being in that much pain. I just say I'm at a 7 at all times because when I looked it up at some point, probably 10 years ago, it was like 7 is the amount of pain when you're nauseous. And I'm like, that is me all the time because of pain. Wow. So I'm just going to tell everyone it's a 7 all the time because that's just where I naturally sit. And it's like, okay, then why aren't you crying? Like, why aren't you upset right now? It's like, I'm very not doing well in here, but if I was crying all the time, you wouldn't talk to me.
Yeah. And when it's been your experience your whole life, it sounds like it sort of just crept up throughout your childhood. And by the time you get to junior high, you're just like in this all day long 7. And I think that's a great answer because like people don't really understand how hard it is to answer that question. Like you're in a 0 to 10. What's your pain level? It's like, ugh, that's such a hard question, you know?
Right.
Because like acute pain versus chronic pain should have a different scale. Because it's such a different experience. So, you know, you're nauseous all the time. I love that research. I'm a 7. I love it. I think that's great. But that's a lot of pain to be in all the time. So back in junior high, your dad finally realizes that you're in this much pain. Do you go to the hospital? Do you start getting, you know, looking into it, trying to figure out the cause?
Yeah. At the time, I was in soccer and I have high arches, so like I should have been using insoles, but I wasn't. So they're like, okay, it's just childhood arthritis.
Okay, yeah.
And tendonitis. And so for that pain specifically, because like all the other pain is pretty normal to me, and I think just soccer exacerbated it. I did physical therapy because my stepmom at the time actually was a receptionist at a physical therapy office too, a sports medicine office. So I went there and he was like, we looked at your x-rays. Here's what we think is going on. And while that helped my knee pain, it was like, okay, now that that's out of the way, everything else. Well, after that, we went on to my stomach pain because I was, it was like every 2 years or so I would start vomiting blood and we didn't know why. Wow. And I haven't since about then, but also I still don't know why because of some BS. it's not the doctor's fault. It's just some stuff that was going on in my family. Like that stepmom is no longer my stepmom and I have a new stepmom and things are great now. But at the time, they weren't. And so she kind of just made up a story and was like, we can't go back there and they can't give you your results. And the doctor doesn't work there anymore. So I'm just not taking you back. So I still don't know what was going on with my stomach. But knowing what I do now, it was probably acid from my diet, but also stress. And IBS and pain causing, like exacerbating all the stomach problems anyway, because nowadays, obviously I know that my pain causes stomach problems, but it also causes my stomach to just stop working. So it's like, now I also have to take like
stool softeners and like Miralax and stuff. If I'm too stressed, then I have to go take those so that way my stomach works and my body continues to work.
Yeah.
So it's been a mess like the whole time, just doctoring and everything. So
are you hypermobile at all?
Yeah.
Have you been checked for like EDS, MCAS, gastroparesis? Because the story you're telling just like makes me think of these things.
Yeah. The last time I was checked was probably 4 years ago. And my pain specialist is about 2.5 hours away, but I will be switching pain specialists soon. I just moved from like the sticks out into not a capital city, but like a larger city of my state. And so there's a lot more hospital resources. So I will have a more local pain specialist. And I believe that we'll start going through all the testing again.
Yeah.
But with my soon to be former pain specialist, we went through all the panels and testing, and they're like, well, currently you don't have those markers. They could change over time, which is, you know, apparently happens, which makes sense and doesn't. Like, that's part of the frustrating process is like, I mean, you fit those symptoms, you match those problems, but also physically you don't. Like, as far as what we're expecting to see in a blood panel or a urine check. So we can't say that you do, but we'll look out for it every now and then and like do a panel again another time.
Yeah, that's so frustrating because like, for, you know, in my case, if we'd done that, I'd still be, you know, non-functional. It was like we tried the meds and they worked. So I don't know. I'm very much of the mind for MCAS in particular, just try the meds. But also for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, that's very often just a clinical diagnosis for the hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And gastroparesis, they can do like a gastric emptying study and all that stuff. Are you feeling like your doctors have uncovered the full picture? I know you have a lot of diagnoses already, but are you like, I think there's something going on here that hasn't, like an underlying condition, something like a connective tissue disease or something else that is, you know, maybe the root cause of a lot of this that is not being addressed?
Yeah, which was also one of my questions that my pain specialist asked me. Because like she's a pain specialist, but she can't diagnose those other things of like rheumatology or whatever. So she was like, all right, do you feel like this is it? Like, do you feel like fibromyalgia is the problem? And I was like, it's possible that I do have fibromyalgia, but if I do have fibromyalgia, I still believe that there's another problem.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't think that fibromyalgia can cause all of these things, because a lot of them do fit into the fibromyalgia bubble. But also, if it was just fibromyalgia, and also we in the last couple months have tried a new medication to like tack on to my essentially nerve blocker, and it doesn't feel like it's made a difference. However, my life has also been very unstable, or like there's been a lot of life events, we'll say. So it's like this medication should help prevent pain flares from getting too bad. They're still pretty damn bad, and like we even upped the dose. Then I had another pain flare recently and I'm still recovering from it.
Which medication is? Is it like Lyrica, duloxetine, something like that?
So I am on Lyrica, but I'm also, I have all my medications right by me. So I'm on, and I also have a list of it. So I'm on Lyrica and I take it twice a day. And if I miss it, oh, life is terrible.
Wow.
So it's like, oh, you didn't take it on time. F you. but then they added naltrexone, which is a microdose.
Yeah, I'm starting that myself.
Yeah, and in the microdose, it's supposed to help even out that stuff. Like, it does have its own little symptoms that are like, you know, that's fine. But it should help prevent having terrible pain flares, so you don't need something like a narcotic, like tramadol. And also, I had to go to the ER for some, or the urgent care for something, And the doctor described it as naltrexone covers your opiate receptors. So you can't take things like tramadol because then you have a possibility to overdose because it's covered. So when it gets uncovered and you're not taking it, or you basically don't notice the tramadol, and then you would take more tramadol, and that's how you would overdose on it on accident. And so that's why you can't take tramadol with it.
That's really good to know. I mean, I used to take tramadol. I don't have it anymore. That's really good to know. Low dose or microdose naltrexone is sort of, you know, sweeping the chronic illness world like wildfire. A lot of people having really good responses to it. We did a great episode about myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome with Simon, where it like essentially cured him, which, you know, we don't throw the cure word around a lot in the chronic illness world. And I just talked to Marisa, who's taking it for MCAS, and she actually got me a hookup where I was able to order some. So I'm about to try it myself for the first time. But this is the first time I've heard this thing about this potential danger, which I think we really need to spread the word about, that, you know, if you're taking low dose naltrexone, do not take opiates of any kind. So that's, you know, that's really important to get out there. Thinking back through your story, the pain issue has never been resolved. You've been in pain your whole life. And do you mind if I ask how old you are now?
I'm 29.
29. So that's a long time to be in a lot of pain.
It only gets worse.
The effects of living in pain like that are cumulative. So like that's been building over time. When did these mental health diagnoses come into play? You know, you mentioned the somatic symptom disorder, bipolar. When did these diagnoses happen?
So I've been in counseling since I was probably about 15, so like freshman year of high school-ish. So I've had PTSD since then. I had a bad counselor before that, and then I probably had several other childhood counselors. So PTSD has always been there. Depression, anxiety, those have always basically been there. Somatic symptom disorder, I got that this year because I took one like 500 and some questionnaire alongside almost 300 questionnaire to be analyzed by, I think, a psychologist. Bipolar has been kind of an on and off diagnosis. It really depends on who you're talking to. I have bouts of mania on occasion, but not often. However, doctors don't usually find it to be true mania because I'm not destructive. However, I'm destructive to myself. I'm like cleaning my whole house, and then I'm on the floor in terrible agony because I did all the things that I shouldn't have, and I did it all in 4 hours. So to me, I'm like, that's destructive, and I haven't slept in a week. That sounds like mania to me.
Yeah.
But they're like, okay, sure, you're not sleeping in a whole week. That could be a couple things. But also, you're not doing anything destructive. And it's like, I don't know how to get it through to you.
Yeah. I mean, thinking back to our bipolar episode with Rachel, she was talking about hypomania, which is sort of like a step down from mania for, I hope I'm remembering these details right, for bipolar type 2 versus bipolar type 1. Like, there are different, you know, manic states that express themselves differently. And what you're describing sounds extremely similar to what she was talking about with like hypomania. So I'm surprised that your doctors would say that and not look into that more or sort of take you at your word on that.
Yeah. I don't want to like belittle my doctor because like he's been extremely helpful. And my whole questionnaire was like, no, you don't have ADHD. And he's like, you definitely have ADHD. And like the medication he gave me is really helping, which is Vyvanse, which is, there's a freaking shortage here right now. So I took I saved my final pill for today and I took it today. So that way I would actually be awake. Cause otherwise I'm a zombie or I had drink like five. It's just like two cans of Mountain Dew, but it's still a lot. It's like,
yeah,
I'm trying to be better to my teeth because like depression has destroyed them and I don't want to do soda. I don't want to upset my new dentist.
So how does it make you feel to have these sort of like overlapping diagnoses? You know, in people I've talked to in a similar situation, where there's just like so many diagnoses at once, it sort of stops being about the actual diagnoses themselves. It's like, you're not thinking to yourself, oh, this is a bipolar symptom. This is a depression symptom. This is an anxiety symptom. You're just like, okay, this is a symptom that I'm experiencing. How do I manage it? How do I deal with it? Sort of moves into just getting through the day in the best way versus like thinking about what is causing what. Is that sort of the situation for you?
A lot of the time, yeah. It's like I have to take notes on what I'm feeling, like if it's especially bad, and I'm still bad at taking those notes and like writing it in my planner and being like, okay, I experienced it this day, and trying to correlate if something happened, because it's like, you know, it's like I have a lot of problems that relate to stress or relate to interacting with people, which like, I'm disabled. I just live with my roommate and my two cats. So unless I'm going out to see family, I really don't go out and see people and socialize and face to face. So like COVID time came around and nothing was different for me. As far as like being like, okay, this doubles back to this and this doubles back to this, like that's exhausting to keep track of. And it like, I've been very in tune with my body, because it's always been like, all right, how do I best describe this to someone? And what am I actually experiencing? And like, am I just feeling this way because I'm upset? Because it's like, you know, if I cry, then sometimes I get a headache. And it's like, that's because I need to drink some water. Or I need to actually eat today. This is also on my little chatting point list. it doesn't feel like what you expect normal people to worry about. It's like, am I breathing properly? Am I drinking enough water? Did I eat all my meals today? What did I have for meals even? When did I last eat? And then it's also like, when did I last talk to someone? Am I upset because I'm depressed? Like, am I depressed because I didn't talk to my cats? Am I anxious because I have something coming up that I don't remember? Like, let me check my calendar. It's like, am I upset because I talked too much? Am I upset because I listened to a podcast for too long? Did I sit for too long? Have I not laid down long enough? Did I go for a walk or something? Like, anything can exasperate any other problem. It's like, well, if I go on a walk, then this will happen. But if I don't go on a walk, then it could be worse. It could be better. I don't know.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting. And like, that's, I think that ties back into the somatic symptom disorder. But it feels like I really have to calculate what I'm up to. Because I can overdo it or I can underdo it. And it's really hard to live inside the lines, which I believe was also something that Gal, you talked to within your first five episodes about PTSD. She was like, I'm tired of living within that line.
Yeah. It's also very much an MCAS thing, mast cell activation. You're reminding me of me. I've been talking about this on the show recently of like, now that I have this diagnosis, and I know that if I exercise too much, I can get sick. If I exercise too little, I can get sick. And it's because I'm trying to keep my mast cells stable. You're really reminding me a lot of people I've talked to with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which often comes with mast cell activation syndrome. Do you get dizzy when you stand up? Do you have like blood flow issues?
I don't know so much that it's like dizzy when I stand up. I have vertigo, which is pretty common for fibro. And like, I've had vertigo on and off for forever. So much so that I thought it was normal. I was like, vertigo, what's that? It was one of those things. But also my hands and my feet, they'll just be ice cold. It's like, I went outside 3 hours ago and my hands and feet are still absolutely frozen solid.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
That's like me. I don't have Ehlers-Danlos, but I do have MCAS and also small fiber neuropathy, which is when like the nerve fibers are damaged by something over time. Very common in diabetes, but it can happen with MCAS as well, because you know your mast cells are releasing chemicals in your body all the time. And you talk about nerve pain, like it is that it's a big cause of nerve pain, but it also causes dysautonomia and blood flow issues, and it can affect your organs. You know, heart rate. It can make cold hands and feet, like all these things. a lot of the things you're talking about, and I'm not trying to, like, you know.
No, it's okay.
Armchair doctor over here, because I'm not a medical professional.
Just like, these are familiar to me, so yeah. This is how I see it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the story that you just told us is like, this sounds to me like someone with an underlying condition that has not been found yet. You know, that's very much the impression that I'm getting. You know, I'm not trying to insist on anything or like push a narrative or anything. It's just so much of what you're talking about reminds me so much of other people that I've talked to about various things. And I'm someone who was misdiagnosed with fibromyalgia at one point. So when someone has fibromyalgia, I think that there is the potential that something was missed, that doctors are like, okay, you have chronic pain. We don't know why. We're going to call it fibromyalgia. But also it's like, well, now we're not looking for anything else. And there might be a root cause for this pain. That's the thing that keeps me up at night, or it did until I got a diagnosis, like this constant worrying in my brain of like, well, what is the thing that they might have done? And what am I potentially doing that's making me worse or better? Like, what do I need to do? Because I don't know exactly what I need to do for my health and my body. And, you know, those thoughts are so familiar with to me, because I lived with that until I was 38 years old. Is that like ringing true for you, for your experience?
Yeah. A little extra about me. My mom is a nurse, and my dad, he was a spine surgeon, but now he just does general surgery. So, but also he had Q fever. He contracted Q fever, which is a form of Lyme disease, when I was little. And so he was disabled, like technically legally disabled, until I turned 18. And he also finished his college. But he's always like, I feel like you could easily have what I had, just like different symptoms, because, like, you know, symptoms are going to be different from person to person. I just like have my lists of things. It's been advised by like my counselors and my arms workers and everyone, and like my case managers. I have like a huge team to like help me manage, because I'm disabled, but like by the state of Minnesota. So I'm on state insurance, and they cover all of this stuff for me. I have my lists of like, here are my symptoms, here's my prescriptions, here's what people have diagnosed me with. So that way, when I like go see people and they're like, all right, is anything new? It's like, maybe this, maybe that. I don't really know. But I don't have to think about it. However, my dad is doing all that extra thinking of like, oh my gosh, it could be this, it could be that. I'm talking to my other doctor friends, and they're thinking this and they're thinking that. Mm. And maybe I can talk to your doctors. And my mom is this was one of my kind of talking points, is she's like, come live back with me so I can take care of you. And it's like, that is very nice and very sweet, and I appreciate that you want to be my mom and like do those things. I'm an adult. I need to live on my own. I need to have some independence. I need to take care of me. When it comes to like my mom, it's like, I feel like it's not like she's trying to do anything bad, but it does feel like, hey, come in my house and be my pet human. Which, like, that sounds terrible, but it is how it feels. And like, I've been homeless and I've been couch surfing before, and people are like, oh, me letting you live with me is like my one good deed. Mm. And it's like, that feels like shit too. And I'm sorry, I kind of got sidetracked from your main question, but it's like, as much as I have all these like, oh my gosh, it could be this, that, and the other thing. One, my doctors will hate me. if I'm like, oh, is it this? Is it that? Is it that? Because like, they're doing all the tests for it. And it's not like it's bad to be like, oh, I want to contribute to theories about my health. Like, that's a normal thing that people want to do. But I also, like, I have my mom as a nurse, and I have my dad as he's a surgeon. And it's like, hey, dad. I literally texted him this recently. I was like, hey, dad, should I be concerned that my tension in my neck is making my face itch? Muscle tension in my neck. Should I be concerned? Should I, like, the internet says that is kind of a problem and you should probably go to urgent care, but I don't want to waste their time. They're busy. Obviously, other people don't have these resources of mom a nurse and dad a surgeon, but it's like, dad, my face itches because my neck is now far too tense. Is that okay? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine. So I do think about it a lot, but also like I try to quell all those thoughts as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when I went to college, it was like, okay, I am in panic mode. And then it's like, okay, well, you can't procrastinate anymore. So now it kind of carries over to my health of like, all right, I can't procrastinate asking because it's my health. And if this symptom goes away before they can check me about it, then maybe it's only going to be noticeable while it's happening. I don't know. How are we going to notice? So it's kind of just like, I'll just write that in my little notebook and my planner and be like, hey, doctor, this is what I experienced that day anyway. And also with things like my chart, it's actually like a lot easier these days. Like, thanks COVID for my chart, because now I can just message my doctor, like, had this symptom today. What do?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a little bit of a tangent.
So you have great resources. I mean,
yeah,
you have parents that love you and care and want to help, and they are both resources that are available to you. Sometimes that can feel smothering, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I know how important it is to be independent and to stand up on your own, but I also know what it's like to have a disability and need help and have to ask for help for things that other people don't. And those things can often live in conflict. And that's just another unfair piece of living with complex medical issues like this. Is there anything in your notes that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that we touch on?
So I think that for me, it's a... So the answer is yes. but I don't know if other states in the U.S. have the system that Minnesota does of GA. I'm in the fibromyalgia subreddit, and recently someone was like, I am worried about what I'm going to do for housing if I get on disability because my income will be so much lowered. And what people in our situation typically do is go into income-based housing. And a lot of people don't know that that's even a thing. And in like capital cities, it's really hard to get into. There's usually like I'm in a bigger city for Minnesota, and it was a 6-month wait for a 2-bedroom, and you can't get a 2-bedroom unless you have 2 people. But also GA, which is general assistance, I don't know that other states do that. I had to go through a process called SMRT, which is S-M-R-T. I don't quite know what it stands for. That allows me to have cash benefits, as well as I'm also on SNAP, which is food assistance, or EBT. I get about $203 a month. And income-based housing, when you go to an HRA, it charges 35% of your income until, you know, you're above the poverty line, essentially. And so at my last place, when I was living alone, my income was still the same. I get the most that I can for my state, which is like, I believe it's 203. It could be 204. I know it's not 205. minor details, but I'm still applying for SSI. And if I don't apply, then I can't stay on it. And it's like, I want to get on SSI. I haven't been able to work, so I can't apply for disability, which would give you more.
The SSDI.
Yes, that.
Yeah, SSDI. That's what I got, SSDI. So the rules are quite different.
Yes, you did finally get that, yeah.
I did, yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
By the way, it's quite a process. I've been, this is my 4th or 5th application that I'm doing. So I'm on the state level of financial assistance instead of government assistance.
Yeah.
And I don't know that all states do this state assistance.
Yeah, it sounds pretty unique. There's some similarities to what we have here in Washington, but definitely some differences.
Were you on that when you, before you?
I had EBT, the same similar program there. I was not on any just like general assistance, nothing like that. I was just on EBT and applying for disability. There is a really awesome insurance program called Apple Health that I was on, where I was getting free insurance, basically, which was like, I mean, beyond helpful. It's like, I'm still so amazed that that was a thing. and like prescriptions are free and all that stuff. So it's basically state-sponsored Medicaid. But then I got on SSDI, and now I'm on Medicaid and Medicare, which I'm still kind of learning the ins and outs of because it's very confusing. And they take my premiums out of my SSDI payments. So it's not free, but I don't ever see the money that I'm paying for it with. So it feels free.
Right, but then
I do have, you know, some prescription costs that I didn't have before. But my insurance has been great, so I have no complaints there. But as far as like general assistance for the GA program in Minnesota, are you getting like monthly payments as if you were on SSI, just money that you can live off of?
So I had to get SMRTed, which is, I think, the state medical review team. I'm also on just straight MA, which is medical assistance, which is just straight from the government health insurance. They cover almost everything I need, all my doctors and all that stuff, like case management. I have a caddy waiver, so that way I can also, like, I got a wheelchair. People kind of don't know what you do once you get on that income that is much lower than what normal people get. And it's income-based housing. And your utilities, once you're there, are moderated as well. So that's one of those things that, like, I've known because I got into that process, I think, when I was like 24, 25. And I feel like a lot of older people don't know that, or just people like who have lived normal lives and then suddenly they're disabled. And like, disability can happen to anyone. So it's just, the housing fear is very real because a lot of people are like, I don't want to live with my family for any number of reasons. It's one of those things that's really important to me is, like, look up income-based housing for your county, for your state, for your area. If you want to live in a different area, like, look up what it is. Maybe put in an application, maybe make some phone calls to those places. Like, that's very important to know. And they don't teach you how to be disabled in high school. So,
yeah, great tip. That's important stuff to get out there. Okay. Well, I have one more question for you.
Okay.
So, normally at the end of the show, I ask a variation on, you know, what would you recommend for other people going through something similar? Or if you could go back in time, talk to yourself in the past, what would you recommend for yourself? I've thought of a new version of this, a new science fiction thought experiment for the end of Major Pain. Let's clone you.
Oh, very Star Trek. Okay.
Yes. So now you have a clone who's exactly like you in every way, who's been through every experience you've been through. And your clone is struggling. As we've just heard, there's a lot that you're living with. What words of advice would you give your clone about how to get through the day and how to keep fighting through what you're fighting?
If you don't trust in your doctors, get a new one and then trust in your doctors. And definitely document what's going on as much as you can. I really hated that stuff growing up. I didn't know how to make goals, so I didn't like making planners or journals or anything, but it's really important to be like, all right, now it's out of my brain. Now I can live my life a little. So it's not like, okay, I have to remember this for this doctor's appointment, which is at that time. And I would definitely have myself do that. Like, it takes a huge weight off of yourself mentally.
Yeah.
And sure, you can't always do things about being in pain or like mentally being in pain. Like, you can do your breathing exercises and you can drink your water and you can, you know, have your leafy greens and that'll be good. But the other thing that you can control in your life is just writing it down so you don't have to worry about it later. Like, have that notebook where you write it all down. So it's like, I know where the notebook is. So now we're good. And it comes with me everywhere. I just write down what's going on and it's out of my brain forever until I need it at that appointment.
Yeah, great advice. So keep a notebook, trust your doctors. What about trusting yourself? What place does that hold in your experience?
Oh my gosh, it's so important to trust yourself. Like, I think that's why having the notebooks is so important, is because
You have corroboration.
Yeah. Like, I have documentation. I have it written down. It's not like I'm bullshitting you. It sucks because it's like, I have chronic pain. So it's like, if I have a pain flare, there's no reason to go to the ER because I know what it's from. And if I go, it feels like maybe they won't. But it feels like they're just going to be like, you are a drug-seeking individual. Yeah. Get the fuck out. Excuse my language. But like, it does feel like that. And it's unfortunate for us as patients. And it's unfortunate for the doctors who are legitimately just trying to help. That's why the documentation is so important for me, is because I have this problem where I feel like I'm less real than everyone else. I give myself less credit than everyone else's opinion. So I'm like, oh, you have that opinion. That sounds like a good opinion. I'll have that opinion too. But the documentation is like, no, I wouldn't have written down if it didn't happen. Like, it happened at a specific time in the day. I have it written down. I have it. It's there. I'm not making this up for fun. I'm not just telling you a story. Like, I love to write stories, but this is not what that is.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't trust yourself, then trust your documentation.
Yeah, this is really, really interesting advice. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Well, once again, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface on your story. I mean, you've just lived through a lot, and you are continuing to live through a lot. And I really wish you the best in your journey. And thanks. Please keep me updated. You know, I have my fingers crossed that we can pinpoint an underlying condition that can, if not bring relief, at least lead to some direction or bring some answers or open up some new pathways of things to try. But it sounds like you're trying really good things. You know, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right. And it's just like, you're living with a level 7 pain all the time, and that just sucks. And that takes up so much space in your body and in your mind. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Please tell us where people can go to connect with you online or anything else you want to plug.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a link tree. So it's linktr.ee/mergoinc, which is MERGOATINK. Again, like that Capricorn and Inc. thing. My Reddit is also Mergoat Inc. It's not listed on my link tree. I can't remember why. I have a Blue Sky account, which is just Mergoat, not Inc. So MERGOATINK. And again, I have an AO3, an archive of our own. So that's SEAGOATINK, which is Seagoat Inc. I really went hard on that branding. So all my other links that I didn't just like spell out for you, those are in my link tree. And like, I'm on TikTok too, and I'm on YouTube a little bit, kind of. So yeah, I'm easy to find there. A lot of my stuff, creative stuff, is like trauma based or just deep or romance. And some of my art has been more NSFW lately. So minors do not interact. But if you're an adult, welcome to my fun stuff. I chat a lot on Reddit and give people a little bit of advice, or like I just did on this podcast, a little slice of my life for a little better understanding. So
awesome. Yeah, I'll put a link to your link tree in the show notes of this episode. Colby, okay. Thank you so much for reaching out, for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Like I said, please stay in touch and keep us updated on your journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's really fun being here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Major Pain. I'm Jesse Mercury, your host and the producer of this podcast. Artwork by Egg Salad Salad. Our theme music is the song Time Machine from my sci-fi synth-pop album, available at jessemercury.bandcamp.com. Send your thoughts or questions to our email address, majorpainpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use that address to find us on PayPal. Tips are greatly appreciated. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice. Find more information about this show or leave a comment on any episode at our website, majorpainpodcast.com. Major Pain is supported by listeners on Patreon. Thank you to our $2 per month supporters, our $7 per month patrons Naomi Adele Smith, Sunny Roberts, Laura Stevens, Kelsey Madsen, All Around Foundation Waterproofing, Alexandria Henderson, Justin Minnick, Heather Muncy, and Robert, and our $25 per month producers, Steve Kavanaugh, Chris Fowler, Trish O'Brien, and Hipster Leia. Learn how you can support the show while receiving special recognition, gifts, and monthly bonus episodes at patreon.com/majorpainpodcast.